Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Everyone, welcome into the Fantasy Bros Football Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester. Tags is out this week, but we've got Kyle Yates with us. Give us a follow on Twitter, at Bobby Fantasy Pro and at Kyle Y NFL. Yates, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. I'm in such a good mood because sports are coming back. Like, I'm watching baseball highlights of all things. Like, we were talking about this before we started recording. Like, I typically don't pay attention to baseball much. Like, I'll watch the playoffs, and if the Cubs are in it, you know, I'm a big Chicago guy. So, but I'm watching it now. Like, I'm actually watching the highlights. Basketball's about to come back. The NHL, the Blackhawks are going to start playing, you know, tomorrow or the next day. So, like, man, I'm in such a good mood.
So you're saying that you watch the Cubs when they're in the playoffs. So basically, like, this is only the third time you've seen baseball in your life?
Essentially, yes, essentially.
Our guest today is Jared Smala of Draft Sharks. He's been a two-time accuracy award champ with our Fantasy Pros preseason accuracy contest where we grade everyone's rankings and see how accurate they've been. He's a great analyst. I'm glad to have him on. You can give him a follow on Twitter at his name, Smola DS. That's S-M-O-L-A-D-S. Jared, thanks for coming to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, guys. Thanks for having me back. Always fun to talk football with you guys. And yeah, I've been watching MLS. That's how desperate I've gotten. I mean, I would never.
I haven't reached that level.
Couldn't be me, man. Not doing that.
It's just nice to see like real people running around on grass, you know?
Right. Sure. Okay. So guys, here's the plan for today's show. Okay. We're going to talk regression candidates. And a lot of times when we talk regression, first of all, we're going to be talking negative regression and positive regression. And every time we use the term positive regression, there are always a dozen people who show up in my notifications who are like, dude, that's not a thing. Regression means to go backwards. No, what regression means is to go towards the mean. So you can progress positively towards the mean, or you can regress negatively towards the mean. But regardless, they're both regression. So Jared has 5 negative regression candidates and 5 positive regression candidates. Yates has the same. I'm just going to play the host role today, and we're going to dive into it here in just a second. But first, I want to tell you, we've got a contest going on. We're giving away a signed Davante Adams Packers jersey, and the details are at fantasybros.com/contest. All you need to do, though, it takes like 30 seconds. You go to Apple Podcast or Stitcher, and you send a screenshot of your review to contest@fantasypros.com. And this contest ends in a couple days, July 31st at 11:59 p.m. Eastern time. So make sure to get your entries in as soon as possible. Every once in a while when we're doing the show, I get really excited and like I talk with my hands and everything and I knock my headphones out of my ear. If you guys want to see all that weird stuff, we're on YouTube at youtube.com/fantasypros. And we also really got on board the Instagram train here last year. And it's really been taking off over there. Our Instagram guys do an incredible job. Give us a follow over there at Fantasy Pros. It's daily, solid, easily digestible analysis. We've started doing quick hitting videos on our page. Just check us out for more content at Instagram. That's where everybody's heading, at Fantasy Pros. You guys are going to love what the Instagram guys are doing over there. All right, you guys ready to roll?
Yeah.
So let's do it.
All right, Jared, you are first. We're going to start out with the negative regression candidates. Why don't you give us your first name?
I'm going to go with Kenny Golladay, who is a guy I've sort of been bashing all offseason, it seems. I just think he's overvalued where he's
Me
going.
Me too, man.
Because, yeah, I think he is in for some negative regression. And listen, Kenny Golladay was awesome last year, and he was awesome with only a half a season of Matt Stafford. He averaged 18.3 yards per catch, 10.3 yards per target, scored on 17% of his catches. So, again, super impressive, but as good as you know this guy is, those are going to be difficult numbers to match this season. If you look at Kenny Galladay's first 2 years in the NFL with a healthy Matt Stafford, he averaged 15.7 yards per catch. Again, that's versus 18.3 last year. 9.2 yards per target. That's a nice number, but it's still, you know, 1.1 yards fewer than he averaged last year. And over his first two seasons, he scored on 8.2% of his catches, so less than half of what he did last year.
Which is still a ton. I mean, that's outrageous. 8.2%?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's still above league average. And listen, I expect him to remain above league average in all these efficiency stats, but I just don't expect him to do what he did last year. Golladay ranked 21st among wide receivers in targets last season. I think he's going to be around there again this season. So for a guy to rank, you know, around 20th, 21st in targets and to finish top 10 in fantasy points, which is where he's getting drafted, that's just very tough to do. It's not something I want to bet on.
I was harping on this yesterday in the show, talking about Kenny Golladay as somebody who's very risky to draft. Now, I agree that his efficiency metrics are going to go backwards, but are his targets going to go up, Jaron?
I don't think so. I mean, he and Marvin Jones have really been about equals in targets the past couple seasons. Now, I think Golladay is still a guy probably on the way up, and you could argue Jones is on the way down. So I do think that gap widens a bit this season. But you also have TJ Hockenson there, who I think is going to see a bigger role this season. You still have Danny Amendola in the slot, who saw, I think, more volume than people realized last year. And they added DeAndre Swift, who can contribute in the passing game. So I don't expect Golladay to jump into the top 10 wide receivers in targets. So I'm just not going to draft him there.
So yeah, it's last year while Marvin Jones was healthy. He played 11 games, 146.1 fantasy points. Kenny Golladay, 146.7. They were virtually the same player. Are you going to draft Kenny Golladay as a wide receiver one?
I have him ranked in that range, and I think, so if he falls a little bit, sure, but looking at these other guys in that range, I might be more inclined to go their direction because, yeah, there definitely is concerns, and that's the reason why we talked about him yesterday on the Riskiest Players podcast was because there is risk involved. Marvin Jones is essentially a 1A, 1B situation. Now, Jones hasn't been healthy the past couple seasons. I mean, he's played 9 games in 2018 and 13 in 2019, so Golladay does have that going in his favor. I'm totally in agreement here with Jared, though, that when we're talking about Kenny Golladay and his efficiency metrics, 18.3 yards per reception on 65 receptions, that's crazy. Like, that has to come down. And he did it on the back of some big plays. Like, I can, off the top of my head, I can remember the I think 75-yard touchdown that he had on Thanksgiving against the Bears. So, you know, like, a big play here or there definitely contributes to a higher yards per reception metric. But he's going to be in that relative range. 17 yards per reception in 2017, 15.2 in 2018. So this is the type of player that he is. He's a big play threat. And the thing working in his favor, though, is that he put up those numbers with David Blau and Jeff Driskel. Like, Stafford's coming back. If Stafford can stay healthy, 17 yards per reception is in the realm of possibility. So I think the argument with Golladay is that he can certainly finish in the top 12. We've seen him do it. He has the talent to do it. But is he worth the pick there? So I think, yes, I will agree that the regression is coming from a efficiency and touchdown perspective, but I don't think it's going to be drastic.
I've got him in my top 12, but if he's on the board, Odell Beckham's on the board, and I'm taking Beckham. If he's on the board, Adam Thielen's on the board, and I'm taking Adam Thielen. So I won't have any shares of Kenny Golladay. Let's move on. Yates, who's your first player?
Same kind of argument here. I'm going to bring up AJ Brown, and it's not that I don't like AJ Brown the player or don't think that he's worth, you know, the draft pick of where he's being selected right now. ECR wide receiver 17, ADP wide receiver 14. I have him in that range. This is just purely a conversation from a regression. That 20 yards per reception that he had last year, guys, that's ridiculous, you know. And when you're talking about a player that he has the talent, he can break those plays and he has the speed, he has the break, you know, he's a monster. But 20 yards per reception on 52 receptions is ridiculous. Like, that is just unsustainable. So that's going to come crashing back down. I have him projected for right now 16.5 yards per reception, and he's still at my wide receiver 14. So that, I mean, if he can finish above that, then he can finish as a wide receiver one again this year. But regression is definitely coming for AJ Brown in
That's exactly where I've got him as well. Wide receiver 14. Same kind of thing, though. I won't have any shares because if he's there, Keenan Allen's there, and I'm taking Keenan Allen. Now, AJ Brown, in the final half of the season, in terms of fantasy points per game, was number 3 in fantasy football. Michael Thomas, by far, number 1. Devontae Parker, number 2. AJ Brown, number 3. This was his rookie season. And you have to remember, Marcus Mariota was there for the first 5 or 6 weeks. And he did nothing. And then Ryan Tannehill took over, and the Titans had the number 1 offense in football over the final 11 weeks. Is this just what the Titans are now, Jared?
I think that's what they want to be. I mean, you know, they want to be a run-heavy offense with an efficient but low-volume passing game. And that is my concern with A.J. Brown. It's just the volume. Like, I think the guy is awesome. I mean, he was a good-looking prospect coming in and obviously just turned in, you know, one of the better rookie seasons we've seen in a while. So I think A.J. Brown is good. So I think he's going to continue to be more efficient than average, but to expect him to do what he did last year, I just don't think that's realistic. And you talk about how good he was over the second half of last season. Even that stretch included a one catch 17 yard game against the Chiefs, a one catch 34 yard game against the Saints, and then, you know, he had 1-3 catches in Tennessee's 3 playoff games. So that's just the downside that comes with a guy with low volume. So I think that AJ Brown's going to continue to be a volatile weekly producer this season unless he sees a big spike in volume.
Sure. All right. So AJ Brown off the board, Kenny Golladay off the board. Who's next for us, Jared?
I guess I'll stick with the theme of the Titans and go with Ryan Tannehill, because it's sort of the same argument as it is with AJ Brown. I mean, Tannehill, in his 10 regular season starts last year, 9.6 yards per attempt and 8.1% touchdown rate.
Historically incredible.
Right. Those marks would have ranked 1st and 7th among all quarterback seasons of 300-plus pass attempts over the past 10 seasons. 9.6 yards per attempt was tops among all those seasons. 8.1% touchdown rate, 7th best. We're talking about Ryan Tannehill. Like, yeah, maybe he's better than what he showed in Miami. I think he probably is better than what he showed in Miami and something close to what we saw in Tennessee last year. But he is not going to remain that efficient. If you just look at what he did in Miami, 7.0 yards per attempt, 4.2% touchdown rate. You know, we'll probably see something in between those marks and what he did in Tennessee. But again, Tannehill, unless he gets a lot bigger volume, I don't think he's going to produce as he did last year in those 10 starts. The good news with Tannehill is I think everyone's expecting regression. He's not going super early in draft. So I think he's kind of fairly priced where he is right now.
Yeah, I mean, through his first 4 seasons in Miami, though, he was number 3 all-time in passing yards behind just Peyton Manning and Dan Marino. He was top 10 in most touchdowns in his first 4 seasons, top 10 in best interception rate, and he did it with lackluster weapons and a struggling offensive line. Now he has a complete offense. He's away from Adam Gase. He's away from the injuries. I think he was pretty dang good in his first 4 seasons. And then he went, and he became the starter, and he made them the best offense in all of football. Is he going to regress? Absolutely. There's no chance that he's going to produce at 9.6 yards per attempt. And if he doesn't regress, you know, 25%, like everyone seems to be projecting, we're looking at a top 5 or 6 fantasy quarterback. He's going around pick 15 for quarterbacks right now.
Well, I mean, for me, I have him with a 5.16 touchdown rate and an 8.2 yards per attempt. That equates to quarterback 17. So,
well, sure. Like, I mean, if he's only throwing 450 passes, is that going to happen?
Right. I have 465 pass attempts on this season.
See, so, I disagree with you on that.
I mean, I don't see why they would go away from what has worked for them. Right. You still have Derrick Henry there. You bring in Darrington Evans, too, which is an upgrade from Deion Lewis. So, you know, more rushing attempts on the ground. There's a possibility for that. So why would you go away from what has worked for you and what got them to into the playoffs last year? So, you know, I think for him to go all the way up to, I mean, Bobby, what are you talking about? Like 500 pass attempts?
520.
520 pass attempts. Okay. I mean, that is.
I mean, how many times have we seen a running back like Derrick Henry handle 700 touches in 2 seasons and then continue to sustain that workload? It just doesn't happen. There's no precedent for that in the last 20 years.
I mean, that is such a draft. Like, Bobby, 437 passing attempts. Granted, in 2018, that was with Marcus Mariota. So, like, I get it. But then 448 last year. So for them to go from 448 pass attempts to 520 means that they're not running the ball as efficiently as they were last year. It is a drastic offensive philosophy switch from what they have.
Okay, so we saw the same exact thing back in 2018, the Seattle Seahawks, 427 pass attempts. And everyone said, I don't want to draft Russell Wilson. He only threw the ball 427 times. You look at the lowest pass attempts per team over the last decade and how much they've increased over the next year, and it's 45 on average, man. And Russell Wilson, what did he do last year? He threw 520 passes. That's just the way that it goes. The NFL changes, man. I don't think we can expect the Titans to pass the ball 450 times again. That's all I'm saying.
Sure. I probably need to bump them up slightly from my 465, but to go to 520, that's a little, that's okay. Too much for me.
All right. Let's see, Yates, it's your turn, buddy. You going to pick one of these running backs here?
I am going to go running back. I'm going to go with Mark Ingram, just purely based on what he put up last year, right? Like, there are several factors going against Mark Ingram to produce the numbers that he had last year. I mean, guys, like 10 rushing touchdowns last year and 5 receiving touchdowns, so 15 total touchdowns. That's crazy. And he only did it on the back of 202 rush attempts and 26 receptions. So, I mean, that is just absurd for him to put up those kind of numbers. And now you factor in the fact that they're not going to be able to run the ball as much as they did last year, right? Like, just the same argument for Tennessee is what we just said. Like, it's very rare that those teams can repeat that specific number, that low number. And then you're adding in J.K. Dobbins into this backfield. The fact that they also want to incorporate Justice Hill, who's another year into the NFL. Gus Edwards is still going to be involved. So for him to put up the kind of numbers that he did last year is going to be unsustainable. And for him to finish, he finished as the RB8 last year. He was an incredible value pick. But looking at this year and the everything going against him, there's no way that he puts up those numbers again. He's going to regress.
Ravens general managers came out and said they have 4 running backs they want to use, and they all have different abilities. Ingram last year had 202 rushes, and then they went on and drafted Dobbins. He's not getting that again, and he's not getting the efficiency he had again. Would you agree with us, Jared?
Yeah, I mean, the 5 receiving scores on 26 catches, that's completely unsustainable, even yeah. Even for like a really good receiving running back, which I think Ingram's fine, but he's not like a top-notch receiving back. As for the rushing touchdowns, I think it's at least worth noting that Ingram did tie for 3rd in the NFL in carries inside the 5-yard line. So when you're getting those kind of opportunities, you are going to score at a higher rate. My bigger concern with Ingram than regression is J.K. Dobbins being there. I think there's a chance that Dobbins proves to be their best running back pretty early in the season and sort of takes over as the lead guy.
I just want to mention, so Ingram on 26 receptions, 5 receiving touchdowns. McCaffrey last year on 116 receptions, 4 receiving touchdowns.
Yeah.
By the way, Mark Ingram, 29 targets, 5 touchdowns. That's a 17% rate. That is 3 times the rate of Tom Brady's career touchdown rate. Like, that is so unbelievably unsustainable. We can't rely on it. All right, guys, I want to pause for just a moment to tell you about the sponsor of today's show, No House Advantage. The return of MLB and NBA is finally here, and No House Advantage is taking a different spin on daily fantasy sports by offering player prop contests across the NBA, MLB, NFL, and PGA for cash prizes. This is an awesome new fantasy sports platform that's leveling the playing field and making it easier to win than on the traditional fantasy sports apps. You can join for free today, download the No House Advantage app, and check out their daily player prop contest without having to make a deposit. After that, choose a contest, play in public guaranteed cash prize pool contest, or create your own private contest with friends. Then select your player props. No House Advantage offers daily player prop contests that include all types of player statistics. Featured player prop contests combine players of different positions across several statistical categories. After that, you're going to earn points for correct picks, compete against other users, and track in real time as you climb the leaderboard. You're going to win cash prizes because No House Advantage offers real money cash prizes every day. There's so many ways to win with No House Advantage, whether it's in public guaranteed prize pools or private contests with friends. So here's what you need to do. Download the No House Advantage app now, and they'll match your first deposit with up to $20 in free play. Let's see here, Jared, you've got a couple running backs as well. Which one are you going to go with?
Yeah, I'm just going to throw these guys together because I think the argument's pretty similar, and it's Aaron Jones and Derrick Henry. These guys became the 9th and 10th running backs to run for 15-plus touchdowns over the past 10 seasons. Christian McCaffrey actually joined them last year. There were 3 guys that ran for 15-plus scores. If you look at the other 7 running backs that ran for 15-plus scores over the previous 10 seasons, all 7 of them scored fewer touchdowns the following year. Not a big surprise, but I think what's more surprising is only 2 of those 7 guys even managed to hit double-digit touchdowns the next season. So, you know, these guys were scoring, you know, 6-plus fewer touchdowns. So I think Jones and Henry both in for fewer touchdowns this season. Jones, to me, looked like the bigger overachiever last season. You know, he tied for the league lead with 16 rushing touchdowns, despite being just 15th in carries and 11th in rushing yards. So, you know, he definitely overachieved there. Derrick Henry, you know, he also tied for the lead at league with 16 rushing scores. He also, though, was first in carries and first in rushing yards. So, you know, he was a bit less of an outlier. The concern with Henry for me would be that he had rushing touchdowns of 74, 68, and 53 yards. You know, that those long rushing scores especially are tough to sustain on a year-to-year basis. So Henry probably not in for as much regression as Aaron Jones, but you know, he's not going to score another 16 times in 2020.
Where do you have these guys ranked then, Jaren?
I have Henry at running back 6. You know, he's sort of the start of a tier behind those first five guys. So it's like, you know, Henry, Joe Mixon, Kenny and Drake, all sort of in that mix.
All right. And Yates, what do you think about these two, man? Where do you have them ranked? Because I agree. I've got Derrick Henry at the start of that second tier, where most of them have him at the back end of that first tier with McCaffrey, Barkley, Elliott, Kamara. Some throw Dalvin Cook in that range, depending on what happens with this holdout.
Yeah, no, I'm not up there as far as Henry in that top tier. I have him at RB6 as well. And he's right. I mean, he's separated by like 4 points with Kenyon Drake and Josh Jacobs in a half PPR setting. So I have these guys right in that range together. Aaron Jones, I have him down at RB10, and he's kind of in this other tier. He'll probably...
You're actually higher on Aaron Jones than most people. Do you know that? Most people have him going outside the first round.
I know. I was talking about Aaron Jones as a risky player yesterday, and then I looked at my rankings. I was like, wait a second. So that'll probably come back down a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, he was the RB2 last year, man.
I know. So it's definitely not a talent issue, but I like what Jared said, that the levels of regression here are a little bit different, right? Derrick Henry is going to regress slightly because what he put up last year is unpredictable. Aaron Jones has other factors that are coming in. AJ Dillon, the fact that, you know, he achieved high rushing touchdown volume on the back of very few carries relative to Derrick Henry. So the level of regression is definitely different. And that's why I'll just go right into my next guy. It's Christian McCaffrey. When we're talking about from a regression standpoint, you have to talk about McCaffrey. Now, does that mean that I'm putting him at RB7 or anything like that? No, he's still RB1. But we're talking about, this is an easy pick because what he did last year was ridiculous from a fantasy points perspective, from a rushing touchdown perspective, from everything. It was just ridiculous. And if you had McCaffrey last year, you know how ridiculous it was because you probably won your championship on the back of his performances. So, I mean, for him to put up the numbers that he did last year, 15 rushing touchdowns, and like I said, 4 receiving touchdowns this year. I mean, he did it with Will Greer, Kyle Allen, and then Cam Newton for the first 2 weeks, right? Like, the quarterback play was not great, and he still put up these ridiculous numbers. So I just don't see it happening again this year, but he's still going to be a phenomenal player. I have him at 9 rushing touchdowns from a projection standpoint and 5 receiving touchdowns. So, but regression is coming.
So regression's definitely coming. Is there any way that you would even consider anyone else over him? Is there any case to be made, Yates?
No, I mean, we'll talk about the guy that I think has a chance and who I think we're sleeping on a little bit as an industry. But as far as overtaking McCaffrey at number one, it would have to be an injury.
I mean, he was 123 points ahead of Aaron Jones last year. That's enormous.
It was ridiculous.
I mean, that's absolutely outrageous. I posted this the other day on Twitter, and if you guys aren't following us on Twitter, this is the kind of stuff that you're missing. But I posted, if Derrick Henry had 2,000 rushing yards and 29 rushing touchdowns last year with everything else remaining the same, he still would have finished the number 2 fantasy football running back behind McCaffrey in half PPR.
That's,
I mean,
absurd.
The difference was even larger in full PPR, but
oh,
I mean, that's
goodness.
How incredible McCaffrey was. So, Jared, what about you? Let's say it's a super flex league or a 2-quarterback league. Would you even consider Lamar Jackson or Patrick Mahomes in those leagues, or is it still McCaffrey?
No, yeah, it's still McCaffrey.
Agree,
for me.
Sure.
I think at 2s, and you can start to consider the quarterbacks. I think I'm with Kyle, though, with that other guy who's probably closer to McCaffrey than a lot of drafters are treating him right now. I mean, I like the direction the Panthers' offense is heading. I wish it wasn't this offseason where, you know, the practice time is limited and we're not going to have any preseason. But I like the Joe Brady hire. I like Teddy Bridgewater as a fit in that offense. So I don't, you know, McCaffrey's going to regress, but I don't see him taking a big step back.
I'm not sure who it is that you guys are talking about. Maybe Raheem Mostert?
Yeah,
nope. I'm just kidding. I think I know who it is. And if it's the guy that I'm thinking, I agree. Now, we've got a couple more pass catchers here. Yates, why don't you give us your 2 pass catchers? We'll move on over to Jared's final pass catcher, and then we'll switch on over and go with positive regression candidates.
Sure. So I'll bring up Jared Cook from a regression standpoint. This one's pretty easy. I've talked about him earlier on in the offseason about what he did last year was just crazy. As you look at the touchdown average rate for receiving touchdowns at the tight end position, he drastically outperformed everyone else. He had 9 receiving touchdowns on 43 receptions. And so when you're looking at guys like Travis Kelce and George Kittle and how they only put up 5 receiving touchdowns last year on the back of 90 plus receptions or whatever they had, and Cook did it on 43 receptions with 9 touchdowns, regression is easy to identify with Jared Cook. And the fact that he's still going in the top 10, being drafted as a top 10 tight end, is very bizarre for me. That's very easy, especially when you factor in now the fact that the Saints sent away significant draft capital to get Adam Trautman, who, yeah, he's a developmental tight end. He's more of the future at the position. But and Cook, too, not even mentioning, you know, the touchdown perspective, but then he averaged 16.4 yards per reception on 43 receptions. 16.4 yards per reception for a tight end is absurd. You just don't see that. And I expect that to come crashing down again this year as well.
So who do you think's more overrated, him or Evan Engram this year? I'll have no shares of either, but I'm curious, like, which one is the biggest avoid?
Both. I think Engram, just because he's going higher in ADP and ECR. Agreed. I still don't understand it. But yeah, I think Engram for me.
Jared, are you going to fight us on either of these guys, Jared Cook or Evan Engram?
I can't quit Evan Engram. I get the injury stuff. But I mean, the guy's pretty consistently produced as like a top 6 tight end, even if you just look at points per game, which I think, you know, is important, because, you know, when Engram gets hurt, you're not forced to stick him in your lineup and take a zero. So I get the injury concern, but I'm still in on Engram. Cook, I'm with you guys. I haven't been drafting him. You know, I think it's never a bad idea to invest in the Saints offense. I think, you know, maybe Cook maintains a higher than average touchdown rate, but it's probably coming down. The yards per catch probably coming down. You know, he's getting up there in age, and the Saints added Emmanuel Sanders, I think the first real legitimate number 2 wide receiver they've had in a few years now. So I think Cook's volume probably comes down this season too.
So Yates, you said Jared Cook. Now your other pass catcher is a wide receiver. It's Devonta Parker. I agree that he's coming backwards, but I mean, we're talking about someone who, as I mentioned, was the number 2 fantasy football wide receiver after Preston Williams went down. Now Preston Williams is coming back. He's coming off a major injury, but just how much do you think he's going to regress? Obviously he's not going to be wide receiver number 2 anymore. But is he actually going to be outside the top 20 where he's being drafted?
Oh, no, I don't have him outside the top 20. This is purely the conversation from a regression standpoint, looking at, yeah, like you said, the wide receiver 2 over that time period, but then finishing as a wide receiver 7 on the year. So I'm not projecting him to finish in that range at all, especially when you factor in the fact that, you know, Preston Williams is coming back. He was a factor. I mean, he stepped in and immediately contributed as a rookie, and Parker, you know, ascended after he went out. And then also Albert Wilson was never fully healthy last year, and he is a slot receiver who just gobbles up targets. So I don't think Wilson is someone that we need to be looking at from a fantasy perspective necessarily, but it's going to hurt Parker's overall outlook. I mean, he went from, in 2018, 47 targets to 128 targets last season. I'm not projecting anywhere close for that target total for Parker this season.
I mean, they did throw the ball 615 times, and
Miami's
going to be playing. Yeah, they're going to be playing from behind again, so he's going to get some targets. But I mean, Preston Williams was better when he was on the field than Devonta Parker. I still don't understand Parker having an ADP wide receiver 25. That's bizarre to me. But okay, Yates, so you like Parker above his ADP. You said he's in your top 20, but who do you like more, him or Robert Woods, whose ADP is wide receiver 26?
It's an easy answer for Robert Woods there.
Yeah, man. Holy cow.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I have Parker at wide receiver 19 currently, and I have Woods at wide receiver 13. But it's literally a tie for wide receiver 11, 12, and 13. So he could be wide receiver 11 easily.
Jared, this is one of those cases where we look at ADP, that's the average draft position in the general public, and then we look at ECR, which is the expert consensus rankings. You can find it at fantasypros.com/rankings. And Robert Woods is all the way up at ECR 17. So the experts have him at 17, the general public at 26. Are you with us? Do you think that he is vastly underrated by the general public right now?
You guys want to know where I have Robert Woods ranked?
I'm excited, man. Because I 7. Trust your judgment. He's 7. All 7. Right.
There we go.
I'm also pro Devontae Parker, too. You look at the raw production last year. You look at all the efficiency metrics, and you just watch him play.
Yeah, exactly.
He toasted Stephon Gilmore in that Week 17 game last year, and Gilmore was like considered the best cornerback in the league. last year. And Parker, you know, he obviously, Parker disappointed his first few years, but he was a former first round pick, looked like a nice prospect coming into the league. So I think, I really think it was just a late breakout for him. And I also like the hiring of offensive coordinator Chan Gailey for Devontae Parker. Gailey runs a really wide receiver friendly offense, and he tends to get big numbers out of his top wide receiver. Four of his last five offenses have produced a top 18 PPR wide receiver, and all four of those guys ranked top nine in the NFL in targets. So he tends to feed his lead guy a bunch of targets, and, you know, as good as Preston Williams looked last year, he's coming off the ACL. I do expect Parker to be the pretty clear lead receiver in Miami this season.
And you got Ryan Fitzpatrick, who once he took over was number two in the NFL in passing yards for the rest of the season. Number one was Jameis Winston, who no longer has a job. So it's not like Ryan Fitzpatrick's going to hurt his fantasy receivers. He's going to throw a bunch of interceptions, but it's going to be a lot of fun. I think he's going to be the starter for at least half the season. So I don't mind Parker either. Now we've got one more regression candidate, and I love this call, Jared. Who do you have?
Yeah, Darius Slayton, the guy I'm just completely off at ADP. Not that he's going super high, but, you know, I like the other two Giants wide receivers better than him, and I think Slayton's still going ahead of Sterling Shepard and Golden Tate. So Slayton last year averaged 15.4 yards per catch, 8.8 yards per target. Those are big numbers that I expect to regress a bit, but they're potentially repeatable. The bigger concern is that he scored 8 touchdowns on just 48 catches last year. So that's, he was crazy, tied for 7th among all wide receivers in touchdowns, despite ranking 52nd in catches, 40th in yards. So TD regression coming. Two other factors I think working against Slayton. One is that his production last year was basically two big games against the Jets and Eagles. 39% of Slayton's PPR points last year came in those two games against the Jets and Eagles. And those were two bad wide receiver defenses. So he sort of feasted on the good opportunities he had. And then Slayton also last year benefited from injuries to all the Giants' other weapons. You know, Sterling Shepard, Golden Tate, Evan Ingram, Saquon Barkley all missed time with injuries. There were actually only 6 games last year where Slayton, Shepard, and Tate were all on the field together. Slayton saw just 34 targets in those 6 games. Sterling Shepard saw 52. Golden Tate saw 41. So
bingo.
When these three guys are healthy, I think it's definitely possible that Slayton is the Giants' number 3 wide receiver.
When I saw Slayton play at the start of the season last year, I was like, man, this guy's a really good football player. But I do think he's the number 3. Now, would you say, Jaron, I'm not drafting Darius Slayton, but would you agree with me that he has the most upside of this group?
Yes, just because he's the most unknown.
Exactly.
Young guy,
we know who Tate is. We know who Shepard is. Slayton could be really good, but I'm not going to pay the price of wide receiver 38 for him. Yates, what do you think?
I'm right on board. I mean, I went through and was going, looking at some of the names as we were planning out this episode, and I was like, oh cool, I'll talk about this guy and Darius Slayton, and then I went and looked at the names that Jared submitted. I was like, dang it, Jared, come on, you got like all 3 of the names that I was looking at. So yeah, no, Darius Slayton was definitely someone that I highlighted and was like, that's unsustainable to have 8 touchdowns on 48 receptions. So I think Slayton is a very good wide receiver, but as you're looking at this wide receiving core, it's going to have to take Tate and Shepard to miss time in order for Slayton to, you know. And it's not like Slayton finished as like a fantastic fantasy wide receiver last year. He was a wide receiver 35 on the season. So it's not like he was a top 20 wideout, you know, so I just don't see the ceiling there.
Now let's flip on over and go to the opposite side here. We've got positive regression candidates. I'm going to remind you guys, this means they're going to regress towards the mean. That's what regression means, to go towards the mean. And the first guy here, Leonard Fournette, that you've got, Jared, completely agree. There's no way he's touching the ball that much, only getting 3 rushing touchdowns again. No chance.
Right. I mean, I think if you owned Leonard Fournette in fantasy last year, you know how frustrating his lack of touchdown production was. The guy finished 7th in the NFL in carries, 6th in rushing yards. He was tied for 36th with just 3 rushing touchdowns. I did an article on Draft Sharks recently looking at which stats correlate most closely to touchdown production for every position. And it actually turns out that yardage correlates most closely to touchdowns for quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end. And based on that regression analysis, with the number of rushing yards Fournette had last year, he was expected to score 8.5 rushing touchdowns. You know, that's 5.5 more than he had. So if he gets that type of volume again this season, he's going to score more. I do think the question is, will he see that type of volume again? Because, you know, the Jags sort of seem like they're done with him. They're kind of a team in rebuild mode. So I'm not really all in on Fournette. But if you are, you know, someone who believes he's going to continue to, you know, rank top 10 in carries and rushing yards, I think you can expect him to score quite a bit more this year.
Yeah, give me the 350 touches. You can sign me up for that at RB18 or whatever he's going. And it's not just the 265 rushes for three touchdowns. He had 100 targets and scored zero receiving touchdowns.
That's ridiculous. I was just about to say that he literally finished with three overall total touchdowns on 265 rush attempts and 76 receptions. And he finished as the RB9 last year.
Right.
Like, that's absurd. Like,
like if he had normal touchdowns, he would have been a top three running back, man.
Yeah, completely. I mean, he was extremely safe last year. He was frustrating to own because, yeah, like Jared said, the lack of touchdown production, but he was safe because of his involvement in the passing game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think this one's an easy, easy pick. And it's kind of like David Montgomery. Like, I don't want to pick him. It's not sexy. But you know what? If I want someone who's going to overachieve above his ADP, it's going to be Leonard Fournette. Now, Jared, what do you say to the people who will say, okay, well, the reason Leonard Fournette only had three touchdowns is because he sucks? Because people are going to say that. People listening to the show are like, someone question him. Someone ask him, you know, just say Leonard Fournette's a terrible running back. Of course he's not going to get touchdowns.
No, I think that there have been multiple studies. I want to say Mike Clay was the guy who did the first one. Basically found that touchdown scoring is much more luck than skill. And I know people don't want to hear that, but the numbers sort of back it up. You know, as we're talking about in the show, guys are going to regress towards the mean. Now, if you're a better player, your mean is going to be higher, but you know, your mean's not going to be an 8% touchdown rate for a good player versus a 2% touchdown rate for a bad player. It's much closer than that. So,
exactly.
You know, if Fournette gets that volume, he's going to score more this season.
I mean, we've seen so many examples of this too. Melvin Gordon, his rookie season, scored zero touchdowns. Everyone thought he sucked.
Right.
What did he do the next season? Double digits, of course, right? So let's go to your first one here, Yates.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about the guy that I was talking about in the conversation with Christian McCaffrey. It's Saquon Barkley.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Alvin Kamara, but this one's great too.
I've got, okay, I'll mention both of them.
Oh,
I got
well, sorry, man.
No, I'm going to talk about Saquon first, though, because I think there's this perception on Saquon Barkley, and I think his production in the last few weeks of the season last year definitely changed that perception, because there were a lot of people that were just like, I'm completely out on Saquon Barkley from what he was doing last year. And we know now that he was prohibited by that ankle injury. And when you have an ankle injury as a running back, you are not able to cut the same way. And Saquon makes his money on his ability to cut in the open field and make defenders miss. And we need to remember just how talented of a running back Saquon Barkley is. Even last year with what he was dealing with from an injury perspective, I mean, he still put up 4.6 yards per carry on 217 rush attempts. But his numbers were drastically down from, granted, he missed
with no offensive line, by the way,
with very poor offensive line play. Now you add in Andrew Thomas. I mean, so 5 yards per carry on 261 rush attempts in 2018. Like I said, down to 4.6 on 217 rush attempts, still over 1,000 yards on the ground, 6 rushing touchdowns versus 11 in 2018, 73 targets in 2019 versus 121 in 2018. So the numbers were down across the board last year, and he hurt people from where you had to draft him, but yet, you know, injury played a huge role in that. And we saw what he can do once he was fully healthy. So I'm just bringing him up in this conversation because we need to remember just how special Saquon Barkley is.
We'll talk about Alvin Kamara in a second. I want to piggyback on Saquon Barkley. I mean, Jared, you were talking about you might want some shares of Golden Tate and Sterling Shepard because you like them more than Slayton. I don't want any of the three because none of them are going to lead the team in receptions. Saquon Barkley had 91 receptions as a rookie, man.
Yeah, I'm with you guys that I think the high ankle sprain, you know, sort of defined Barkley's season. I mean, I think when he first suffered it, it was like a 4 to 8 week injury is what we heard. And
right.
He came back in 3 weeks. He didn't look the same, though, for the next couple months. And I actually tweeted earlier in the offseason, you probably could search and find it, but if you just remove like the middle 7 games of Barkley's season last year and compare, you know, all his efficiency metrics in his other games versus his rookie year, they're basically the same. You know, he was the same guy when he was healthy last year. So I still think he might be the most talented running back in the league. Now, McCaffrey's usage is better.
Agree. Right.
But again, I don't think the gap between McCaffrey and Barkley is that big.
I'll go as far as saying I don't think I've seen a more talented running back besides Barry Sanders in any NFL tape I've ever seen. Saquon's that dang good, man. And Christian McCaffrey's amazing. But if you put Saquon Barkley, if you give him the touches that Christian McCaffrey had last year in that offense, I think he's better. I just think he's a better football player. I'm drafting Christian McCaffrey higher, but let's not forget how good Saquon Barkley was, guys. He was amazing.
Yep, completely.
Now, Yates, you also said Alvin Kamara. Let's talk about him.
Kamara went from 14 rushing touchdowns in 2018 to 5 in 2019 and 4 receiving touchdowns in 2018 to 1 last season. So he went from 18 total touchdowns to 6 last year. And despite all that, still finishes the RB12. And it's the same argument with Saquon Barkley that he was dealing with injuries. Like there, it's been documented that I think he had 3 separate injuries that he was dealing with last year. I think, you know, for him, he is still an incredibly, incredibly talented running back. And there are going to be people that are going to see him at his current price tag and say, no, I don't want to pay that. I'll go with another guy. But if we're talking about a player who can finish as the RB1, it's Kamara, it's Christian McCaffrey, it's Saquon Barkley, and maybe Zeke. And I think that might be the end of the list. Like, Kamara is still in this range where he is an incredibly talented running back, and we need to remember that how talented he is, and the numbers are going to bounce back up this season.
I'd put Mixon, Drake, and Miles Sanders in that conversation too. Anyone you want to add to it, Jared?
No, I wouldn't even include Mixon, Sanders, and Drake. I mean, I don't think they're candidates to finish number one overall, but I agree.
I mean, I think it's a very low likelihood. I'm just saying there's a chance.
Yeah, I mean, I love Mixon and Drake especially, so I definitely don't want to poo-poo those guys. But yeah, to me, Kamara versus Zeke is a fair argument, like for that 3 pick. I think Zeke's probably safer because the rushing volume and that offense is going to be so good, and he is involved in the passing game. But you know, Kamara, I think, is going to be more involved in the passing game. He has just as high a touchdown ceiling as Zeke does. You know, the Saints have finished top 10 in the NFL in rushing touchdowns in 10 of 14 seasons since Sean Payton arrived. You know, they were 20th last year. You know, it was just one of 4 times they failed to crack the top 10. So I think the team in general is going to run for more touchdowns, and that obviously includes Kamara.
That's why I've got Kamara number 2 over Saquon Barkley. I mean, Kamara has 80-plus receptions in each of his first 3 years. Guys, he only played 14 games last year. He basically only played 13 because he was banged up in a couple of them. That's absolutely outrageous. He could get 100 receptions this year with 180, 190, 200 carries.
Yeah, I mean, still averaged 4.7 yards per carry last year on 171 carries. So even with as banged up as he was still performing really, really well.
Yep,
absolutely. It was a high ankle sprain for Kamara, too. Same as his Saquon. I don't think it was as severe, but that's probably a lesson to take away from last year. When these running backs suffer high ankle sprains, even if you're selling low, it might make sense to, you know, shop those guys and see what you can get from them. Because that's just a tough injury, especially for running backs to come back from.
Now, Jared, earlier you brought up, I brought up Robert Woods and talked about him extensively, but it's your turn now. What do you have to say?
Yeah, so what did you say? He's like wide receiver 26 in ADP.
Yes, and you've got him number 7. I've got him number 14.
He finished wide receiver 14 last year in PPR points. That was despite scoring just 2 touchdowns on 90 catches. Only 7 wide receivers caught more passes than Robert Woods last year. Only 13 had more receiving yards. 73 receivers had more receiving touchdowns than Robert Woods. If you just give him an average touchdown rate, he would have scored about 7 touchdowns. And if you give him 7 touchdowns, he would have finished as wide receiver 6 in PPR points. So again, that's all with Brandon Cook still there, who's now gone. So I think Woods is probably in for even more volume than he's seen the past couple of years. So again, and this doesn't mean you have to draft him at wide receiver 7. You know, he's almost always there in the 4th round. You can sometimes get him in the 5th round. I think he's one of the bigger values at any position right now.
I said 14, but I lied. He's number 15. Yates, where do you have Robert Woods?
I have Robert Woods at 13, I think I said. 13, but again, I have these guys, Mike Evans, Odell Beckham, and Robert Woods, each finishing with 194 points in my projections. So they're tied. So I can move Robert Woods up.
Yeah,
I love him this year.
I'm looking at his rankings, man. Like, everybody who's done well in accuracy over the last few years has Robert Woods well above his ADP. I mean, there's only a couple guys who are even there's one person who's lower than his ADP in the entire industry, and you're right near the very last in accuracy. Like, anybody who dominates in accuracy all has him in their top 15. All right, let's go to your next guy, Yates. Who do you want to go with?
I'm going to bring up Tariq Cohen. If we're looking at Tariq Cohen and what he did in 2018 when this offense was actually like competent. You know, he was dominant and finished as the RB13 in fantasy football. That was on the back of 71 receptions and only 99 rush attempts. Granted, he was averaging 4.5 yards per carry and averaged 10.2 yards per reception and 5 receiving touchdowns in 2018. Guys, he went from 10.2 yards per reception to 5.8 last year. Like, he was just not utilized correctly in this offense. Trubisky could not get the ball into his hands in time for him to be able to turn up field and create. He also has talked about how he wore down towards the end of the season, so he's working this year on doing, like, endurance training and stuff like that, so that way he can remain as healthy as he can throughout the entire season. So, and zero rushing touchdowns last year, guys. Like, this, he was just not effective because the offense was not effective with Mitchell Trubisky at the quarterback. So this season, I'm projecting Nick Foles to be to take over three games into this season. And if that's the case, then Cohen is currently an absolute bargain at his ADP. He's all the way down in the 40s, I think. So for me to, I have him up in like the, I think RB 30. So he's an absolute steal in ADP right now.
I've got him there too. I'm not drafting him until Latavius Murray's off the board, probably Tony Pollard. So I don't know how many shares I'll have because those guys are going to be available as well. But I'm going to have a lot of shares of Tariq Cohen. Jared, how do you feel about Tariq Cohen this season?
Yeah, he's. I just don't draft guys like Cohen, like, you know, Tariq Cohen, James White, those, you know, pass catching specialists. I don't tend to draft them. I just think they're tough to rely on a week to week basis. And Cohen for me is tough to figure out because, as Kyle mentioned, he was super efficient in the passing game in 2018, but he was not efficient at all in his 2017 rookie season, and he was not efficient at all last year. Among 43 running backs with 30-plus targets last season, Cohen ranked 42nd in yards per catch, 41st in yards per target. He was 30th in Pro Football Focus's receiving grade. So I guess I'm still not convinced he's like an above-average pass-catching running back, and if the Bears aren't convinced either, I think it's possible they shift some more of the targets to David Montgomery, who actually was more efficient than Cohen last year. So I do have Cohen ranked ahead of ADP, but he's still not a guy I'm like going into drafts targeting.
Okay. Well, Yates and I definitely disagree on that one, but you know, this is why we talk, so that this is why we have guests on, so that our listeners can get different perspectives, because all three of us have been hyping Tariq Cohen. Like, we're going to get a bunch of shares. So there you guys have it. That's why certain people do not want Tariq Cohen. All right, back to you. Who would you like to go with here, Jared?
I'll go with Jared Goff because he sort of, you know, coincides with Robert Woods. For starters, Goff is one of only three quarterbacks to finish as a top 12 fantasy quarterback in each of the past three seasons. It's Goff, Russell Wilson, and Dak Prescott. I think people can, you know, poke holes in Goff's game, and I'm definitely not going to argue with that. But as a fantasy quarterback, he's been good over the past three seasons now. And he finished 12th last year despite a 3.5% touchdown rate. That was 25th out of 27 quarterbacks with 300-plus attempts. And it was 1.7 percentage points below his career touchdown rate heading into last season. If you give him that career touchdown rate last season, he would have scored 32.5 times and finished as quarterback 6. So, you know, Goff, for where he's going in drafts, I believe he's outside the top 15 in ADP. I think he's a value, even if that TD rate doesn't climb. But, you know, based on what he did over his first three NFL seasons, I think he's a good bet to score more this year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Now, I don't want any shares of Jared Goff. Maybe in a two-quarterback league, there's some other guys I like a little bit more that I can get in that range. But I do agree that he's going to bounce back a little bit. What do you think, Kyle?
I'm not in agreement here. It triggered something in my memory, so I went to Twitter and I looked this up. So in advance of the Bears and Rams game, I put out a tweet November 11th of 2019. Jared Goff's last 16 games played, a completion percentage of 60%. Mitchell Trubisky's last 16 games played, 65%. Passing yards for Jared Goff, 4,256. Trubisky's 3,313. So he's definitely got the advantage there. Touchdowns, 17 for Jared Goff. Trubisky, 20 in touchdowns. Goff's interceptions over the last 16 games played, 16 interceptions. Trubisky's interceptions was 9. So 17 touchdowns and 16 interceptions for Jared Goff over those 16 games played. I think the game in 2018 where the Bears and Rams played, I think it broke Jared Goff. Like,
he was so great before then, man.
He was phenomenal before that. And then that game, I think he threw 4 interceptions, lost a couple fumbles. Like, he was just not, he's never been the same quarterback since then. So I think with what Todd Gurley struggling last year, like, that he needs a efficient running game. And so to build off of, that's just what the offense is predicated upon. So if Henderson, Akers, you know, Malcolm Brown, John Kelly, this four-headed committee or whatever they're building in Los Angeles, if they can be efficient, then great. I think Goff can be a value, but I'm just not in on him. I haven't liked what I've seen over the past couple seasons.
Remember after his rookie season when Jared Goff was just abysmal? 54% completion rate, 7 interceptions, 5 touchdowns in 7 games. Just
awful. That
was
with Jeff Fisher. That doesn't count.
That was Jeff Fisher. But here's what I'm getting at. Their offensive line under Jeff Fisher was one of the worst in the league. 2017 and 2018, it was one of the best in the league. We saw a very good version of Jared Goff. 2019, one of the worst in the league. And what happened? He took a huge step backwards. It's again going to be one of the worst in the league. But here's the difference between Goff and Mitch Trubisky. And it's weird that we're having this conversation, but I think you're right. I think they're both very bad quarterbacks. Is that Jared Goff is going to have a lot more volume because they're going to be playing from behind a lot more. I don't believe in this defense at all. I know a lot of people are like, Sean McVay's amazing. This team's going to win 8 or 9 games. I don't think so. I think this Rams team is trash.
Yeah, and again, I'm not arguing that Jared Goff is a good real life quarterback.
Sure, but, you know, sure.
He's been a pretty good fantasy quarterback. Again, top 12 in fantasy points each of the past 3 seasons. The other nice thing about Goff, I mean, you don't want to draft him as your every week starter. You know, I think he should be part of a platoon. Goff has been pretty predictable on a week to week basis. He fares very well against bad defenses. He fares very poorly against good defenses. So it's been kind of easy to predict when he's going to have his good game. So again, you know, draft him as part of a quarterback by committee, start him against those bottom half quarterback defenses.
All right, Yates, your turn, buddy. Which way are you going?
I'm going to stick with the Chicago Bears. I'm going to bring up Anthony Miller. As we look at Anthony Miller's rookie season in 2018, the stats that he put up was actually pretty impressive. I mean, 7 touchdowns on 33 receptions. Granted, that's not in a sustainable rate, but he fell all the way to 2 touchdowns last year. We saw his target totals go up, his receptions go up, yardage go up, everything like that. His yards per reception stayed around the same, but the touchdowns just simply weren't there. Again, because the offense was so inefficient and just terrible. So I think if we're looking at Anthony Miller and projecting now that there's going to be more involvement or more, he'll be more involved in the offense now with Taylor Gabriel not there and Ted Ginn replacing him. You're not giving Ted Ginn more than 3 targets per game, you know, 3 or 4 targets per game. Miller's going to be involved heavily in this offense. And then if he can regress to the means from a touchdown perspective, we've seen him put up 7 before. So 5, 6 is not out of the realm of possibilities, potentially even more. If that's the case, he's an absolute value.
You've got Nick Foles taking over likely too. And nobody loves slot receivers more than Nick Foles loves slot receivers. And here's the thing. We've seen Anthony Miller play 70% of snaps in 11 games through his career. And what's he done in that time? 11.6 fantasy points per game. That's the same mark as Cortland Sutton, Terry McLaurin, Odell Beckham last year. I mean, he's been really good when he's been on the field, but injuries, and then last year, for whatever reason, they just didn't play him at the start of the year. Maybe he was injured. I don't know, but they didn't play him. When he's on the field, Anthony Miller's been a good wide receiver.
Yeah, and I mean, the value from a fantasy perspective this year is that he's going as a wide receiver 55 in ADP, or around that range, right? So,
and again, ECR 46, so the experts are much higher on him, especially Dan Harris, who's like doing cartwheels right now listening.
Yeah.
All right, what do you think, Jared? You drafting some Anthony Miller?
I'm okay with where he's going. You know, Miller was a big touchdown producer at Memphis, too. He was a prospect I liked coming into the league. His 2019 was so strange. You know, he did basically nothing for the first 2 months of the season. He had that monster 5-game stretch, and I think it included that Thanksgiving game against the Lions. But then he closed the season with a pair of 1-catch games. So it's not like he, you know, closed on this hot streak. He cooled off again at the end. So I'm not exactly sure what to make of him. The Bears passing game still isn't one I want to heavily invest in, even if it is going to be Nick Foles. And I do think Nick Foles will start most, if not all, of their games this season. But I think beyond Allen Robinson, I'm not sure this passing game is going to produce, you know, 2 weekly reliable fantasy plays.
All right, so we're through Anthony Miller. You've got 2 more left, Jared, and then we're going to move to Yates for his last one as well. Are you going tight end or wide receiver here?
Let's stick with the wide receiver, Mike Williams, who is like the poster boy for touchdown volatility. He scored 10 times on 43 catches in 2018. He caught 49 balls last year, but scored just twice. That's a 23% touchdown rate in 2018, a 4% touchdown rate last year. The league average for wide receiver is about 8%. With Williams, I would expect him to kind of rebound to something above league average. I mean, he's 6'6", 220 pounds.
Yeah.
He had a 12% touchdown rate across his 4 years at Clemson. And again, he has that big 10 touchdown season on his NFL resume. So, you know, he's obviously going to finish somewhere between 4% and 23%. I would expect it to, you know, be something above that league average of 8%. But, you know, Williams went for 1,000 yards last year. It was one of the quieter 1,000-yard seasons. So if he can do that again, and then score, you know, even 6-7 times, I think you're talking about a big value at ADP.
Every time I talk about Mike Williams on this show, I get significant pushback. I love Mike Williams, man. This guy's really good at football. Hey, right now, he's going outside the top 40 wide receivers. And I know what you're going to say, Yates, Tyrod Taylor. But Phillip Rivers was bad last year, man.
I mean, there's a difference between a bad Phillip Rivers who airs it out downfield and a capable and competent Tyrod Taylor who keeps it, you know, safe and around the line of scrimmage. So I think Williams is at his best when he's in contested catch situations downfield. And that's just not what Tyrod Taylor is going to do. Tyrod's going to only take that shot if he knows that Williams is open. And does he have the talent? Of course. But I'm looking at this passing volume in this offense, and I'm not finding a way for him to be able to get to, you know, the level that Jared's projecting. Now, necessarily, is he going to regress to the means from 2 receiving touchdowns? Yeah, I think he can finish with more than that, of course. But I just don't see 1,000 yards in the cards here.
So you're drafting Keenan Allen?
No, I'm not drafting either of them at their current
ADP. I'm drafting them both at their current ADP, man. Listen to this schedule through 9 weeks. The Bengals, the Chiefs secondary, the Panthers secondary, the Bucks, the Saints, the Jets, the Dolphins, the Jags, the Raiders. I am loading up on Keenan Allen, Hunter Henry, Mike Williams, Tyrod Taylor the first 9 weeks of the season, and nobody can stop me.
I also expect Justin Herbert to take over at some point this season. I mean, you just look at the history of quarterbacks that go in the top 10, and the majority of them start, you know, more than half of the season. So
that would be the difference, is if Justin Herbert does take over. Herbert has a cannon for an arm, and he will air it out downfield. Now, I think that, you know, that's the difference. If Herbert is taking over, then I expect Williams to step up. But the issue is going to be that are you going to hold on to Mike Williams for that long if he's not producing at the level that you need him to? Is he going to take over that spot on your bench and you're going to hold on to him with the, you know, possibility that Justin Herbert takes over at some point in the year, especially in a season where you don't have a preseason and Justin Herbert isn't going to get any playing time? It wouldn't surprise me at all if Herbert doesn't play at all this year. Now, if there was a preseason, I think I would have seen Herbert step in, but with no playing time, I don't see that happening.
And plus, are they really going to bench Tyrod Taylor when he's 6-3 or 7-2 heading into the bye?
Exactly.
Because that's going to happen. And it's going to happen with this defense.
Yep, I agree.
All right, let's see here. We've got 2 tight ends left. Yates, you're going to give yours first, and then we'll finish the show with Jared's tight end.
Sure. I'm going to go with George Kittle, because if we're talking about regression to the mean, it is ridiculous that Kittle has finished with 88 receptions and 85 in 2018 and 2019, respectively, and finished with 5 receiving touchdowns both seasons. Based on and not to mention the reception totals, but then 1,377 yards in 2018 and 1,053 last year, and still 5 receiving touchdowns.
And he was playing on a broken ankle, man.
I mean, like, this dude is too talented to be finishing with only 5 receiving touchdowns. And when you're looking at Debo Samuel probably going to be missing the start of the season, Jimmy Garoppolo, another year acclimated into this offense, now a full season under his belt as a starter, this offense should be better from a passing perspective and more efficient even than what it was last year. They're still going to be able to run the ball as effectively as they were last year. So I think Kittle has a very, very good chance of finishing higher than what he has from a receiving touchdown perspective, which is scary. When we're talking about Kittle from a fantasy perspective, where he's finished as a tight end 3 and tight end 2 on those performances alone.
So are you drafting him over Travis Kelce, and how high are you drafting your first tight end, Yates?
I have them both in that same range. So I really have said, like, throughout this offseason, I've been like, just take, if you are committed to taking one of these 2 tight ends, just let someone take Kelce early, and then you'll take Kittle later. If someone takes Kittle first, then take Kelce. You know, I'm good with either one of them. I have them separated by 3 total points in my projections.
Here's the difference. I think Kittle's much better. But I think Patrick Mahomes is way better than Jimmy Garoppolo. Now, Travis Kelce's almost as old as Rob Gronkowski, like 6 months younger. But Jared, you say that he has positive regression coming.
Yeah, Kelce does. Similar to George Kittle, he underachieved in the touchdown department last year. Kelce led all tight ends in targets, catches, and receiving yards, but he tied for just 7th at the position with 5 receiving touchdowns. And you look at the numbers, the problem was his inability to convert targets near the goal line. He finished 2nd in the league last year, among all players, not just tight ends, 2nd in the entire league with 12 targets inside the opponent's 10-yard line. Kelce converted just 2 of those into touchdowns, so that's a 17% conversion rate. Over the previous 3 seasons, Kelce converted 9 of 22 targets inside the 10 into touchdowns. That's a 41% conversion rate. So I would expect that to climb, you know, back towards 40% in 2020. I think Kelce easily has a 10 touchdown season in him in this Chiefs offense. And if that happens, you know, he's a guy who would be worth a first round pick in fantasy drafts.
So is that where you're drafting? Would you draft him at the 1-2 turn?
Yeah, I think that's when he's worth starting to consider.
Yeah,
I think Kelce and Kittle are both excellent picks anywhere in the second round.
I'm not drafting Travis Kelce if Miles Sanders and Kenyon Drake are on the board. If either of them on the board, I'm drafting those guys. But once those two are gone, yeah, I'm drafting Travis Kelce over Josh Jacobs, Nick Chubb. I'm drafting him over the number two wide receiver on my board. Michael Thomas is number one. I've got Devontae Adams number two. So I'm going to have a lot of shares of Travis Kelce. Now, I'm like you, Yates. I love Jonnu Smith. I like Hayden Hurst. I'm a fan of Tyler Higbee, and I don't think you are. But I wouldn't mind having one of those guys. But if I can get Travis Kelce in the second round, I'm doing it almost every time.
It's such a competitive advantage. I mean, at the position where, yeah, like Jonnu and Hayden Hurst, they come with question marks. They're not guarantees, right? Like, we can say it and we can identify them as potential breakouts like we did with Mark Andrews last year and players like that, but they're not guarantees. And so, but however, at the position, Travis Kelce and George Kittle outside of injury are guarantees to be a competitive advantage. So if you're willing to pull the trigger there, I get it. I totally get it.
All right, guys, that's all for today's show. Jared, really appreciate you taking the time to come on. As always, it was a blast.
Yeah, thanks, guys. That was fun.
All right, and I want to say thanks to the sponsor of today's show, No House Advantage. Download the No House Advantage app now, and they'll match your first deposit with up to $20 in free play. We have a giveaway going on. Don't forget to sign up for the Devontae Adams signed jersey giveaway. You can find out the details at fantasypros.com/contest. All you need to do takes 30 seconds. Leave us an honest review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, then send a screenshot of that review to contest@fantasypros.com. This contest ends in 2 days, July 31st at 11:59 p.m. Eastern time, so make sure to enter as soon as possible. And don't forget to add us on Instagram. If you haven't joined the platform, everyone's moving on over there. It's time to join the Instagram platform, and we're at fantasypros. Tons of solid, daily, easily digestible analysis. Again, that's Instagram, and we're at Fantasy Pros. For Jared Small and Kyle Yates, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your football. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Carol G.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct, but most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.